Welcome to a personal growth episode of the IP Management Voice. In our personal growth series, we'll guide you on how to enhance your IP system contribution and maximize your professional impact. Tune in to gain valuable insights to help you advance personally and in your career as an IP expert. In this episode, you will learn how a structured networking system helps IP experts build purposeful relationships, share proof of their expertise, and turn professional visibility into qualified conversations and engagements.
Imagine you spend your entire life, like your whole career, just protecting intellectual property.
Right, the really heavy stuff.
Yeah. You deal in patents, trademarks, trade secrets. You meticulously safeguard the absolute most valuable assets a company has. But what if I told you that the most valuable bulletproof asset in your entire career
is actually entirely unpatentable?
Exactly. Today, in this deep dive, we are talking about your network. And I know right away the word networking probably makes you wince. You know that feeling. You are standing near the lukewarm coffee urn at yet another industry conference.
Ugh, clutching a stack of business cards.
Right. And just absolutely dreading the next forced conversation about the weather or like hotel Wi-Fi. It is the universal dread of the awkward networking event.
It really is. Yeah. And I mean, it's especially dreaded by highly analytical, rigorous people, you know, like IP professionals. Yeah. Because it feels so messy and unquantifiable, we tend to treat networking as this necessary evil, like a sort of social luxury or chore that we just have to endure so we can hand out those cards and say we did it.
But what if we've been looking at this completely backward? What if networking wasn't about forced small talk at all? But instead, it was an algorithm.
A measurable system.
Exactly. A measurable strategic operating system for human connection that you can actually control. So we've got a fascinating deep dive today. We are pulling from a really comprehensive white paper by IPBA Connect.
Yeah, their piece on networking for IP experts.
That's the one. Our mission today is to extract the exact playbook from that source for building a network that generates true trust transfer. We want to look at how you turn mere visibility into real authority and tangible business opportunities. Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can get into the actual how-to playbook, we first need to understand why networking isn't just a nice-to-have for knowledge workers.
Right. It's a structural necessity. And in the intellectual property space specifically, the reality is that the work itself is inherently networked.
How so?
Well, think about it. Innovation cycles are incredibly compressed right now. Technologies like AI and biotech, they are moving way faster than the law can keep up.
Oh, absolutely.
And because of that speed, no single actor controls the information or the incentives or the decisions across the entire commercialization chain.
Yeah.
You just can't sit alone in a room and effectively guide a product to market anymore.
I mean, I like to think of the entire IP lifecycle. So your R&D teams, the product managers, the legal department, the investors, as these completely isolated islands.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And a carefully curated network essentially acts as the necessary bridges between them. But why is human connection the bridge? Like, why can't the bridge just be a really good legal brief?
Because of a concept called trust transfer. Let's look at this from the perspective of a decision maker. Say, a chief technology officer at a mid-sized tech firm.
Okay.
She has a sudden, complex IP issue. They can just go to Google and search for an IP lawyer. They'll find hundreds.
Thousands, probably.
Right. Now that CTO has to spend mental energy vetting five unknown lawyers, reading their bios, trying to figure out if they actually know what they're talking about.
Which sounds exhausting.
It is. That mental exhaustion is called search friction. It's incredibly costly and stressful. But if a trusted peer of that CTO says, hey, I worked with this specific IP expert on a similar robotics patent, they are fantastic.
Oh, that trust immediately transfers to you.
Exactly. The search friction drops to zero. They don't have to go hunting. And the perceived risk of choosing you is just gone. Plus, a strong network like that acts as a huge stabilizer during down cycles when budgets tighten up.
That makes total sense. It drastically shortens the sales cycle. But let me push back on that for a second.
Sure.
I get that a network makes getting the job faster and easier. But does a well-built network actually make the technical work itself, like a complex prior art analysis or an R&D strategy, fundamentally better? Or does it just make the business process faster?
Oh, it absolutely makes the technical work better. And here's why. Structured interactions surface weak signals early on.
Weak signals.
Yeah. So when you are genuinely connected across those isolated islands you mentioned, you spot emerging technologies or impending policy shifts or weird litigation trends way before they become mainstream problems.
Oh, I see.
Right. So if you're talking to engineers regularly, you know where the tech is going before the patent office does. It sparks co-creation and prevents insular thinking. So you aren't just speeding up the coordination of filings. You're actually improving the quality of the facts and market signals that go into your legal work.
Okay. Wow. That is a huge paradigm shift. It literally upgrades the quality of the work. So now that we know why this matters, we really need to talk about the architecture of building it. Because we are officially throwing away that vague, unhelpful advice of just attend more events.
Please, yes, throw that away.
So how do we intentionally design the system?
The foundation of the system, according to the source, is purpose before presence. You have to define exactly why you are networking before you ever step foot in a room or log on to LinkedIn.
Give me an example of a purpose.
Well, are you trying to shape a debate around AI copyright? Are you trying to learn about a new domain, like, say, quantum computing? Or are you simply trying to originate new mandates for your firm?
Okay, so being really specific.
Extremely specific.
Yeah.
Clear purposes dictate which rooms you need to be in and which threads you should join. If you don't have a purpose, your activity just becomes noise.
And once you have that purpose, the next step is positioning. You need to articulate your specific expertise very simply. There's this concept in the playbook of creating a messaging spine.
Yes, the messaging spine.
And this is where I think a lot of highly qualified people get it wrong. What does a bad positioning statement look like?
A bad one is a generalist claim. Mm-hmm. It sounds like I am a partner providing full service IP solutions for all industries.
Which sounds like literally every LinkedIn bio ever written.
Exactly. And the problem with that is human memory. People remember clarity. They do not remember generalists.
Because it's too broad.
Right. If your positioning is that broad, it blurs their memory of you. When that CTO asks their peer for a recommendation, the peer isn't going to remember the full service IP person. They remember the specialist. So your messaging spine needs to be a single razor sharp sentence that identifies the problem you solve, the exact audience you solve it for, and your unique contribution. And it should be backed by three solid proof points.
So instead of full service IP, a good messaging spine would be something like, I help early stage robotics founders secure freedom to operate so they can close Series A funding without IP roadblocks.
Perfect. It tells me who you help robotics founders. It tells me the problem, freedom to operate. And it tells me the outcome closing Series A funding.
And you just keep that identical across all platforms, right?
Yes. Keep it identical everywhere. Your LinkedIn, your bio, your website. It becomes your anchor.
And once that anchor is set, you have to map your stakeholders. And for IP experts, you can't just stop at other attorneys.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You need to map out the CTOs, the founders, the university technology transfer offices.
Even judges, clerks, right?
Exactly. Standard engineers, clerks, all of them. You have to chart exactly when each of these roles becomes decisive in the life cycle of an idea and what specific evidence they need from you at that exact moment.
And the universal rule of engagement with all of these different stakeholders, according to the white paper, is give first, prove relevance.
Right. You solve small problems for them.
Like sharing a practical insight or curating a relevant case study. You do this consistently to build compounding trust before you ever ask for anything.
Are you an IP professional looking to grow your practice through digital channels? Then check out the resource hub linked in the show notes. It's built specifically for IP experts who want to improve their visibility and attract new clients. You'll find tools, templates, and strategies for content marketing, LinkedIn, business development, and much more. Everything is designed to help you grow smarter without needing to become a marketing expert yourself. Take a look and see what fits your goals. End of advertisement.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because the advice here is to design for serendipity.
Yes, designing for serendipity.
Now, as an analytical person, that sounds like a total oxymoron. Doesn't scheduling serendipity completely ruin the organic magic of a natural human connection?
What's fascinating here is that serendipity actually favors the prepared. Yeah. Quality networks don't grow from massive, random, forced networking campaigns. They grow from repeated, lightweight touch points.
What kind of touch points?
When you schedule small, consistent rituals, like dedicating 30 minutes every Thursday to host an open office hour call, or blocking out 15 minutes a day just to leave thoughtful comments on other people's work, you're essentially giving luck more chances to find you. you are creating a massive, sustainable surface area for that organic magic to actually happen.
Okay, I love that phrase, creating a surface area for luck. So let's get into the literal day-to-day mechanics of that. If we have our architecture, what does this operating system actually look like on, say, a random Tuesday?
Yeah, let's look at the daily routine.
We've got this 90-day sprint playbook in the source material, and the core engine of it is the 3-2-1 rhythm. Walk me through that.
So the 3-2-1 rhythm is your weekly cadence. It stands for 3 thoughtful comments, 2 direct messages, and 1 public post per week. That is the entire baseline.
Let me stop you there because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a listener who is billing like 60 hours a week right now.
Yeah, it sounds daunting.
Wait. 3 well-crafted comments, 2 targeted DMs, and a piece of original content every single week. How is that minimal overhead? That sounds exhausting.
It sounds like a lot until you break down the mechanics of why it's structured this way. Notice that the heaviest lift, the original public post, is only required once a week.
Okay, fair.
The bulk of the rhythm is commenting. And mathematically, a thoughtful comment is incredibly powerful. When you write a brilliant 50-word comment on a post by an industry leader who already has an audience, you are piggybacking on their reach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are getting your expertise in front of their network without having to build the audience yourself. It takes maybe 5 minutes, but the return on investment is massive.
That is a great point. It treats networking like a sustainable 15-minute-a-day workout plan rather than deciding to run a random networking marathon once a year, handing out 500 business cards, and then just collapsing.
Precisely. Here. It protects your momentum. And you pair that rhythm with what the white paper calls microformats.
Microformat.
Yeah, analytical people often think they need to spend 6 months writing a massive, peer-reviewed treatise to prove they are smart. You don't. Share a one-slide framework summarizing a complex regulation. Host a 30-minute AMA on a Friday afternoon. These are low-effort, high-signal touch points that keep you top of mind.
And it's not all digital either. There is a very specific playbook for offline integration. For example, hosting small thematic roundtables. We are talking 6 to 12 carefully selected participants where one highly practical question anchors the discussion.
Yes, the roundtables are incredibly effective.
And the execution here is flawless. You send a 1-page pre-read so everyone is prepped. You facilitate a tight, strictly timed 20-minute discussion. And then, this is the golden rule, you send a neutral summary crediting the specific contributors within 48 hours.
That 48-hour follow-up is where the actual value crystallizes. It proves you listen and synthesize. Another crucial offline mechanic is codifying how you make introductions.
Right, connecting two people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you connect two people, you never just send a lazy email saying, hey, you two should talk. You use one specific line of context. Like, you both care deeply about early freedom to operate for robotics grippers.
Nice and specific.
And you propose a crisp next step. Plus, you always get dual consent before making the connection, stating any conflicts or sensitivities up front. It shows immense respect for everyone's time.
And another part of this is building a small council, right? Like 5 to 7 trusted cross-functional peers who meet quarterly to exchange feedback. I can see how that builds trust rapidly. But let me ask you about the direct messages in that 3-2-1 rhythm.
Sure.
If I am proactively messaging 2 people a week, how do I execute that outreach without coming across as a transactional nuisance? Because we all hate those overly familiar, pitchy DMs.
Oh, that is the ultimate trap. To avoid being a nuisance, you have to completely change what you are tracking. You must instrument your outreach.
What does that mean?
It means you don't just spam people to hit a quota. You track what we call qualified conversations. A qualified conversation isn't just a friendly chat about the weather. It's a discussion where there is a live need. The person has decision-making influence, and there is a concrete next step.
Okay.
In your CRM, or even just a spreadsheet, you explicitly log the next best action, the NBA, after every single touch point.
But what?
Maybe the NBA is send them the new checklist on AI copyright or invite them to the robotics roundtable. When your outreach is always anchored in providing a specific, relevant next step based on a problem they actually have, it is never a nuisance. It is a highly valued service.
Okay, I am trying this 3-2-1 rhythm. I've got my CRM open, but I know myself, and human nature being what it is, I am going to gravitate toward what feels easy and safe. What is the biggest trap I'm going to fall into here?
The first major pitfall the playbook highlights is over-indexing on your peers. It feels incredibly good to get kudos and engagement from other colleagues in your exact field.
Let me give you a scenario. Think about it. You post a brilliant, highly technical breakdown of a recent Supreme Court patent ruling. Five other IP lawyers comment, wow, great analysis, spot on.
Yep, happens all the time.
You feel like a total rock star. You think, wow, my networking is crushing it, but none of those lawyers are going to hire you. They are your competitors. You just spent an hour building an echo chamber.
Exactly. That is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Peer validation feels like business development, but it seldom converts into actual business. You have to ensure you are talking to the actual decision makers, the founders, the product leaders, the investors. And crucially, you have to translate your expertise into their language, not just use dense legal jargon to impress other lawyers.
The second pitfall that IP experts specifically panic about is compliance blind spots.
Oh, this is a big one.
In IP, crossing conflicts or accidentally sharing client-specific details in your content completely ruins your career, let alone your trust. The advice here is strictly operational. Use redaction templates, generalize your examples into hypotheticals, and always get explicit permissions.
Always.
But the ultimate antidote to almost all these pitfalls, the fear of sounding salesy, the fear of confidentiality breaches, is creating what are called proof assets.
Proof assets are your best friend. These are concise, highly shareable artifacts. Think of a one-page checklist for IP readiness, a generalized mini case study, or a lightweight diagnostic tool that assesses a specific IP risk. They state a problem, your approach, and an outcome.
I like to think of a proof asset as a Trojan horse for your expertise. You can't physically walk into a startup's closed-door board meeting, but if you give the CTO a brilliant one-page diagnostic checklist, they will literally take it into that boardroom for you. It does your networking for you while you sleep. And it allows your network to advocate for you because you've given them the exact tool to show how you work without them having to explain it themselves.
That is exactly how it works. It arms your advocates.
So what does this all mean for how we measure success? Because if I look at my dashboard and my vanity metrics look great, like my following is growing, I'm getting dozens of likes on my posts, but I look at my calendar and it is completely empty of actual buyer conversations. Am I failing?
This raises an important question about how networks actually breathe. Chasing followers absolutely distracts from qualified discussions. Your network needs to alternate between two phases, breadth and depth.
Breadth and depth.
Yeah. Breadth is exploration. It's commenting, meeting new people, expanding your reach. That's where you get those vanity metrics. But depth is the consolidation phase. That's where you take those new connections and deepen a core circle to actually deliver results. Too much breadth fragments your attention, and you become a superficial contact to thousands of people. But too much depth limits your surface area for luck, and you become highly valuable to only three people. If your calendar is empty of buyer conversations, you are stuck in breath. You need to use those proof assets, your Trojan horses, to drive people out of the awareness phase and into decision-making depth.
Okay, so we've mastered the current playbook. We've defined our purpose. We set up our messaging spine, we are running our 3-2-1 rhythm, and we are armed with our proof assets to avoid the peer echo chamber trap.
We are ready.
The final step here is to future-proof this network against the massive shifts coming to the knowledge work landscape over the next 5 to 10 years.
And there are some massive trends reshaping how expertise is valued right now. The first is a distinct shift away from broadcasting to massive broad audiences and a move toward curated communities of practice.
What does that look like?
The future belongs to experts who curate intimate spaces where peer problem solving happens in public, like those roundtables we discussed earlier.
There's also a move toward productized expertise. Instead of just selling your hours, you package your knowledge into small, fixed-price, first-step offers, like a standardized IP readiness check or a template library.
Right. It drastically lowers the barrier to that first engagement. If a peer wants to refer you, they don't have to convince their boss to sign a massive retainer. They can just say, hey, start with their $500 readiness check.
But the most disruptive trend, without a doubt, is the AI factor. Generative AI is raising the noise floor exponentially.
Oh, exponentially.
Yeah.
Within a year or two, anyone will be able to generate a 10,000-word, competent-sounding treatise on IP law in about 5 seconds.
That's terrifying.
Because of this massive flood of synthetic content, proof over promise becomes critical. Verifiable, human proofs-like witness performance, co-created case notes with real clients, and your participation in standard-setting consortia, that will become the ultimate anchor for credit.
It's like human networks are going to become a cryptographic verification layer,
yeah.
Like a human firewall against this flood of AI-generated thought leadership.
I love that analogy.
Think about it. If an AI wrote an article, who cares? It's just noise. But if a trusted, verified human peer in my small council hands me a diagnostic tool that they personally vouch for, I trust it. As AI ruins the internet with infinite content, human trust becomes the only unhackable currency left.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the ultimate goal of all these future trends is building cross-disciplinary narratives. As AI handles the baseline tasks, the basic prior art searches, the initial drafting, the most valued IP conversations will be the ones that connect engineering, product strategy, finance, and policy.
So everything connected.
Yeah. Your human network becomes the translation bridge that turns highly technical IP insights into prompt action for stakeholders across all those different silos. And asynchronous formats like sending an annotated slide deck or a quick recorded video clinic paired with analytics, those will be key to nurturing those cross-disciplinary relationships across global time zones.
So to quickly recap the journey we've been on today, we are entirely shifting our view of networking. It is no longer a dreaded chore by the coffee urn.
Thank goodness.
It is an anti-fragile algorithmic operating system. It's built on defining your exact purpose, holding to a sustainable 3-2-1 rhythm of outreach, arming your advocates with forwardable proof assets, and verifying your credibility in an AI-saturated world.
Yes.
By treating human connection as a system, you naturally filter out all the noise, you bypass the search friction, and you magnetically attract the exact problems you are uniquely equipped to solve.
Exactly. It translates your hard-earned expertise into predictable, compounding opportunities. You aren't leaving the trajectory of your career up to chance. You are actively instrumenting your luck.
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over, and it's a powerful one. If you spend your entire career protecting, defending, and monetizing the intellectual property of your clients or your company, what if your carefully curated, highly trusted human network is actually the most valuable, unpatentable intellectual property you will ever own? Something to think about next time you're standing near that lukewarm coffee.
Thanks for tuning into this personal growth episode. You can find more in-depth resources on this topic and many others in our resource hub, linked in the show notes. And remember, if you have questions about personal growth or boosting your IP system contribution, feel free to reach out anytime.